buttons every chance I get. You can't keep me away. All right. Howdy, ho, kids. It's 35 seconds after the hour of 12, and this, the month of June in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. Live from beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, it's the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. Thank you for being there. It is Friday, and welcome to Day 12. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. Speaking to you through the Electro Voice RE20, the finest microphone known to man. This is the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. Want to be part of today's program for whatever unholy reason? If you'd like to email, it is rick at rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com. And I have good news for you today, friends. Now, coming up later on today, a whole bunch of stuff to get through today. We got Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Now, I can't swear to this yet. I can't verify it. I can't confirm this with any accuracy, but the word on the street, the word among the people in the grapevine, the word in the ether, is that he's seen a film for the first time in almost 12 months. The Rick Emerson Show film critic has seen a film, which he will then criticize. He'll be doing that. We got our final pair of Rickles tickets. And the final opportunity for me to sit here and repeat the phrase, Rickles tickets, over to myself, as though I were a stoned college freshman. What else? Scotty J is in the house today. More news about him in just a skosh, as our Japanese friends say. Scotty J here. We'll have Scotty J's Man on the Street. Apparently it's some sort of, it's a band or it's whatever, some sort of, some kids playing the rock. So Scotty J's Man on the Street today. Top five. Yesterday we let Jen Lane pick the top five. She chose the Condoleezza Rice top five. Today that means that we will have the top five Ramon songs featuring Marky Ramone. What else? And finally, last but certainly not least, we have the new single from Weird Al Yankovic. I hold that in my figurative hot little hand. So we will get to that. 503-733-2970. All of that plus CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, who will be in his house today. Also from Los Angeles, CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Like us, the three world famous Phil Hendry Show at 7. 503-733-2970. We are joined today, as are we always, by, who am I talking to here? By Sarah?
I'm still here.
All right.
Hi.
Sarah Dillon is going to be gone next week, by the way.
I am.
She will be, you will be in Boston and then Manhattan and then to parts unknown and then somewhere else. Is it just Manhattan or are you?
I think we'll probably go to Brooklyn, too. My sister has a friend who lives in Brooklyn and my son lives in Manhattan.
Fantastic.
She's better off being a jet setter instead of standing in front of some green screen pointing at a highway.
I don't think they'd let me stand in front of the green screen anymore.
Were you in front of a green screen?
I was.
All right. Okay.
There's nothing real about TV. Everybody stands in front of a green screen.
What is your... TV's stupid. Says, see, I could be all bitter about it because nobody offered me a TV job. What does your sister do exactly?
She used to work at the Seattle Weekly, and then she decided to move to the East Coast. So she's currently working at a coffee shop.
Is she between assignments?
She's between assignments.
Yeah.
But she's getting some freelance work.
So. All right. Excellent. There you go. Yeah. You will note that I asked you the obligatory leering comment about your sister because I am not that guy.
You've met my sister and made many leering comments.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, we have her on video from the listener party.
Do I ever? I have her sitting in your lap, I think, actually.
Uh-huh.
Or
oh,
you're
yeah.
sitting in her lap?
No, she was sitting in my lap.
One of you was drunk and sitting on the other one. That's all I know.
We were both drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And we were fired like 2 days after that.
Yeah.
It was the best thing ever.
We'd like to thank Intercom for supporting us. Hello? Is this? Ah, crap. Sarah X. Dillon is here. We'll talk more about you in just a moment. Big news in the world of Sarah X. Dillon. She will be gone next week. Ably assisting us will be Kristen Bowie, who is sitting in today. Should you hear any and all technical glitches today, feel free to call and make excoriating comments.
Oh, come on.
No, we got a call screener. You won't even hear
it. Set up for success, not failure.
No, it's everything was fine yesterday. I'm sure things will be fine today. It's a positive attitude. I can feel the good. No, I can feel the good show. I can smell the good show on the horizon, like so much radio napalm.
Yeah.
It's wafting over. I can already sense it's going to be a fantastic day. I mean that in a non-Eddie Haskell kind of way. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
A Centralia man wrestles a raccoon. R. Kelly sex tape will be made public. Another MySpace rascal is in trouble. This time, it's a corn-fed gal from the Midwest who flies to the Middle East to meet a gentleman caller. She never made it. And Zakawi was still alive after his safe house was bombed, but died when he inhaled too much freedom following the American troops and the liberation among the rebels.
Best thing ever. Fantastic. All of that, plus the top five, plus Weird Al, plus what have you. All right, so there you go. I was unclear about which big announcement to make first, because it is a Scotty J announcement and a... So here's the thing. Do I go in terms of show staff and seniority and do the Sarah announcement first, because you are clearly the more crucial link? Or do I build up to you? Do I have Scotty J be sort of the Spinal Tap to your puppet show?
You can... Let's start with Scotty J.
Scotty J.
We can do a build-up.
Not that we don't like puppet shows.
Scotty is typing me here. It says, start with the bottom. Okay, Scotty, can you come in for a moment? Scotty J, intern for the Rick Emerson program, now entering the studio. All right. Scotty J, how are you, sir? You want to move the microphone?
Why don't you use this microphone?
Thank
you can use mine.
All right.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm honored.
Scotty J, so now this is, you have been interning for the Rick Emerson show for many, many long, tedious, painful, excruciating, and agonizing weeks.
It's been about 2 years.
Yes. Time sort of slows down. And so you were not supposed to actually start working every day here for a couple of weeks because you had all this so-called schooling to finish with your learning things.
Knowledge and disaster.
Yes.
That's right, and that's exactly
we
what
like
I
to avoid
you.
Knowledge here, yes. And so you were going to be starting, two weeks from now, a week and a half, something like that, because you had finals. I don't know what the final at a broadcasting college consists of. I can't imagine what they actually quiz you on there.
It's on the colors of the buttons.
Seriously, what are they? I don't wish to mock continuing education, but I really am unclear about. Do they just quiz you on how to fill out an unemployment form, or is it just sort of a you?
Well, a couple of the quizzes are, number one, I have to do a demo tape so I can actually get a real job out there.
Did they tell you what brand of alcohol to purchase once a radio station has fired you for like the 80th time?
Yes, they do, actually. I think it's...
Did they tell you how to swallow your disdain for the business after like a year and a half and how to walk in every day with a smile on your face as little pieces of your soul are chipped away?
Well, they do tell you to expect to be fired and wear it proudly.
Do they use a lot of euphemisms like, radio is a very tumultuous business?
They do. They say stuff like it can be real rough out there.
It can be real rough out there.
Take it with a grain of salt.
Do a grain of salt.
And do it for free, by the way.
They tell you to leave your car doors unlocked because it's going to be repoed anyway.
No, but right. I'll write that down.
We should get to the announcement, though, which is you were going to be, you had to go enjoy your finals and crap next week. But apparently you're not going to be in every day starting Monday because why?
Well, I asked a favor of the teacher.
Just say it. Don't use false modesty.
He basically said, Scotty, you don't have to take the test.
He actually said you had excelled to such heights that you did not need to come in and prove your worth. You did not need to take the final.
That's right. And if you're in
college, they waved you on.
That's right. If you're in college, the one thing you want to do is just show up every day, and then you'll get benefits like this.
So there you go. So congratulations to Scotty J.
I did the same thing, my
friend.
Graduated back in 1978.
Excellent. All right. So we got to do. What else do we got to get for the new? Well, so Sarah Dillon, we were talking about this yesterday. Yesterday was your final day at COIN?
Yesterday morning was, in fact, my final day.
Did the air smell a little sweeter this morning? Did the birds chirp a little more loudly?
I found out what it's like to wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning,
yeah.
And it is fantastic.
You missed the COIN early news.
I missed the entire thing. I missed my entire shift.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time. So Sarah Dillon is now free from her obligations at COIN Television. So she is once again living the nightlife and sleeping late.
A jet setter.
I went out to two shows last night.
Drinking champagne from the slippers of Chorus Girls. Mm-hmm. And your hair is the brightest shade of pink I have ever seen in my life. So we got to get a picture of that before you go.
Okay, yeah, it took a while.
You're going to be gone.
He's on their way to CGBB's in New York, I think.
I'm excited. I've already gotten the weird looks from people walking down the street. I love it.
No, it's great. See, now you've got that hip edginess back that management loved about you.
I feel like I'm me again. It feels really good.
Did you feel like you were wearing a Halloween costume for the last year?
I felt like I was Superman, like dressing up every day, like in this business suit and hair. Not that I didn't like the job, because I did. But
she threw her hat into the air.
We should note, by the way, that she was not fired from Coin.
No.
That she was, in fact, you did volunteer. You just felt like it was not a thing. The grind of it was just a little too much.
It was my time to leave.
All right. Did you keep your demo reel, though?
Yeah, I have a ton of tapes.
Did you have the, and did you keep the demo reel that has you doing? What was the charming animal story? Was it a squirrel?
I can play you my first day at Coin on VHS.
We'd love to hear it.
You guys can compare your radio.
Because we all have bad air checks of ourselves when we were DJs.
I got boxes of the whole.
Yeah.
We just scratched the surface making these.
We might try to do that this week. Maybe we'll try to do that today, play some of our bad air checks. We'll either do that today or we'll do it next week maybe to make Scotty and Kristen feel better about themselves. All right, well, there you go. It's 503-733-2970. Hans from London is on the phone. He goes to the London School of Economics and listens to us on... I don't know how he listens to us. I can't advocate or condone any sort of illicit internet broadcasting of this. Let's go to the city desk with your personal savior, Tim.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the city desk, Tim Riley.
From higher down the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents... Yes, I'm pinning those needles. Pop that down a little. The City Desk Newsbeat. Tim Riley reporting.
Fantastic. He's too much broadcaster for one...
Just too much.
For one channel on the board.
Breaking news. Oregon State University senior Sarah Jean Underwood, who's 22, is Playboy's Playmate of the Month in his July 2006 issue. She's a Portland native who caught Playboy's eye last fall when photographers visited the campus in search of the girls of the Pac-10.
Sarah Underwood. What is she?
She's a willowy blonde.
A willowy blonde.
Yes.
I don't even know what willowy means.
Just like that.
The airbrushing is already started. You can tell this is from Playboy.
And she's going to be at Tower Records. They can't sell records. They might as well bring in some babe.
Tower Records. Tower empty store till we can figure out what other form of media to stock that people will buy. You could tell this is from Playboy, by the way, because she looks like a CGI character from Final Fantasy III.
You know, we don't get that magazine here anymore.
No. They're probably still getting it over at Intercom. So there you go. So enjoy that.
Maybe Dave Paul's getting
bastard.
It. It used to be addressed to him.
No.
And he was at that Christian station?
He used to come to Dave Paul. I remember the first time that Dave Paul got the Playboy magazine. He came over to me and he had that particular... His face was all flushed and he was... Rick, and he had that Dave Paul, that like KXL voice. Rick, I believe I got something in the mail that was meant for you this morning. I don't believe this is appropriate for the news department. He came and handed it to me. So here we go. So we're looking at... She has, of course, because this is a picture from Playboy, she has, of course, no pores, no visible blemishes, and it doesn't really appear that she's alive. She does, in fact, appear to be some sort of resuscitation training.
Like a rubber Janet Jackson mask.
Yes. Like if you sort of took Paris Hilton and airbrushed all of the bumps off of her face, and until her head was just sort of a dome. All right. Well, there you go.
So she's going to be at Tower Records.
No one cares. But I will just say this, though, that she's an OSU senior, so she's like 21. Every guy, by the way, remembers the moment when you first picked up a Playboy magazine and the Playmate of the Year, the centerfold, was younger than you were. Every guy has, for me, it was a girl named, wait for it, Layla. And she was from something or other, and I was like 22, and I think she was 20, and at that moment, that's when you begin to hear the hands of Father Time ticking loudly in your ear. You can sense right, it's time to start, take a long look at that 401k, because you are heading up the hill.
Yep, it's a deafening roar in my ear.
Okay. All right, and you didn't even go to broadcasting school, so you're doubly screwed.
I went to college for a year, and... It was the same situation as Scotty J, so history does tend to repeat itself in this thing. So that is a good thing.
I remember actually going to broadcasting school because I was you're such an idiot, and I don't mean to knock, because Kristen, you went to broadcasting school, right?
Yeah, I did.
Did you find that it helped you?
I found it got my foot in the door, but that's pretty much about it.
You can be honest. Did you find it? Would you say, let me ask you this, Kristen Boy. Would you say that broadcasting school was A, somewhat a waste of your time, B, not a waste of your time at all, C, the biggest waste of your time you could ever possibly imagine?
It was the best excuse to tell my mom that I could drink every night.
<There you go. laughs> and you could tell people with quite a, you could look them in the eye and go, no, I'm going to college. And they would sort of look at you with newfound respect, not knowing that it consisted
of... I listed all my electives as the important classes I was taking, like my poli-sci courses.
When did you go to broadcasting?
Graduated in 2003.
So this is probably, did you, at any point, did they teach you how to use a razor blade and a splicing block?
Yes.
Really?
I was the last class to learn how to do that.
That's pretty cool, actually. No.
I used to teach that.
You know why? Here's why that's useful. Splicing kids is what they used to do before there was the Pro Tools and the so forth. And literally, it was like you would record something on a big reel-to-reel like you see on those old computers at Mission Control in 1960. And you would literally cut the tape with a razor blade, slide it together, and then tape it together. Here's why that's an important skill. Not because you will ever use it. You will not. It's an important skill because you can be on radio programs like this one telling pithy anecdotes about, I'm old enough to remember splicing things, which is kind of what Tim and I do every day now. So there you go. So it gives you color. You know what I mean? It gives you a little texture to your personality. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let's talk about Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, shall we? He was alive when U.S. forces arrived at the site of Wednesday's bombing just north of Baghdad. Major General Bill Caldwell, a spokesman for the multinational forces, which really isn't multinational anymore.
Because Bulgaria left.
And Poland.
So we're screwed.
And it says the leader of al-Qaeda was very much alive when the U.S. military found him, but not for long.
He was conscious initially, according to the U.S. forces that physically saw him. He obviously had some kind of visual recognition of who they were because he attempted to roll off the stretcher, as I am told, and get away, realizing it was U.S. military.
He was trying to roll to the sweet taste of freedom over the hill. So I'm unclear about all this. So did we kill him or not? I mean,
sure we did.
Well, I mean, obviously we did it in an over.
It's American pride.
We killed him.
Millions of dollars later, we finally killed somebody worth something.
Before that,
it was just, you know, scores of nameless civilians. It really didn't matter. Apparently, this guy was maybe not a manufactured bad guy. But
Zarqawi is sort of the...
He handed out the knives that kill people.
Zarqawi is sort of the prize in the box of Cracker Jacks. We had to get through all the civilians to get to him. He was sort of at the... you know what Zarqawi was? Zarqawi is that thing that they give you at the box at the bottom of the Fruit Loops, and you got to dig your way through all of them. You know what I mean? He's like the civilians are just the civilians are like that brown crap in the Lucky Charms box, and then he's a marshmallow. I'm looking for an analogy, you bastards. Get off my back.
I would say that's fairly accurate. Yeah.
My point is that obviously we did kill him in an overarching sense, but here's the yesterday it was that we had bombed him with 2 500-pound bombs,
and he was dead.
And we know he was, because they were rolling out pictures of his bloated corpse everywhere, because that won't do anything to inflame the Muslim world. And so, but then today...
Oh, they're glad we're there.
The arsenal of freedom is on the march. But then today, it's that we bombed him and he was alive. It's like that South Park thing about, like, step one, steal underpants. Step two, like, question mark. Step three, profit. Like, step one, bombing and still alive, and then, like, step three, dead. Somewhere else, and that I'm unclear about step two, because he was on a stretcher, still alive, and yet now he's dead. So I'm wondering if that was just like him in a room.
Well, do you have any insurance?
And a rubber hose. No. Kaiser turned him away.
Uh-huh. Open up those pearly gates, Lord. Here I go.
If only he'd been bombed in Canada. All right. Do we have sound or more on that?
We just played it. That was it.
Well, okay.
You didn't live long enough to have two pieces of sound.
All right.
Meanwhile...
Let me do this, though, because we get this guy. This is Hans from London, who's on the hold.
Oh, he's been here all the time?
He's in London. What else does he have to do? It's like 2 in the morning there. All the bars are closed.
No, they stay open all night now.
I thought the bars were closed.
No, they changed that.
Hans?
There were too many drinking yachts.
What's up, Rick?
How are you? Hans at the London School of Economics. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I've got four things for you, and I'll do them in ascending order of interestingness.
Okay,
he doesn't sound English.
But first, no, he's not English. You're from where?
I'm from Beaverton.
Beaverton, but now you are in London.
I am in London for just a little while longer, yes.
All right, and so you are... So once you get your degree at the London School of Economics, are you going to practice whatever you're going to practice in England, or are you going to come back here?
Well, that's actually the first thing on my list.
Okay, well, before we get to your list,
yes,
let me ask you this: so the bars in London, do they now close at 2, or are they open all night?
The vast majority of the pubs here close at 11 o'clock.
That's the old.
And then there are dance clubs that stay open pretty much all night, and there are a few
wine
pubs that stay open 24 hours. Now they just passed something this last fall that allowed them to stay open 24 hours, but it's a very limited number.
Let me,
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to question the news. Let me ask you this. Would you say that nightlife in London is superior to or inferior to the nightlife here in the United States?
I would say that I prefer definitely Portland. Portland is the place to be.
That is the correct answer, my friend. All right, what are your four things that you have to share with us?
First thing is, and you asked me where I'm going after this, I think I will now be the most northern Rick Emerson listener. I will be moving to Yellowknife in the Northwest Territories of Canada.
To where?
Starting in August. Yellowknife. It's up where the sun don't shine 20 hours a day kind of place.
In Canada?
Yep.
All right. Okay, and why are you doing that? I mean, apart from the 100% literacy rate and the nationalized health care and the not going to war
sure.
all the time.
Well, obviously.
Other than that.
There's a big diamond mining industry up there, so I'm going to go find my fortune up north.
Are you going to go hobble people? Are you going to be the guy who stands at the gate and chops the feet off people who try to smuggle diamonds out of an orifice?
Well, that's a middle management position. I got
you're going to calculate the cost of the feet as they get chopped off the miners. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
Second thing is, yes. I saw a billboard here for Big Love. So,
Bill Paxton,
soon
right.
The Mormon polygamy show will be bringing its love to England.
It's not really a very good show.
I've heard.
It's okay. It's mediocre at best. I find that the best thing about the show is Bill Paxton. I like, what's her name, Jean Triplehorn. Chloe Savini, though, man. It's like you get three episodes in and you just want a horse to kick her in the spine. It's a terrible.
You just want to scoop your eyeballs out with a spoon. I understand.
Yeah, All right. And so what is the third thing?
Third thing is, talking about Oregon State and Playboy.
Yes.
I belonged when I was a beaver. I was in a fraternity who mysteriously had copies of Playboy that would show up for free every month at our doorstep.
Right.
And the rumor is that when Playboy was in town to do a Girls with a Pac-10 back in like the 80s or early 90s, they wandered past a fraternity party at our house, handed shots in a Playboy from one of our fraternity parties back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since, they've had a steady stream of Playboys that just arrive at our fraternity address.
So you're somehow on the Playboy Friends for Life list.
It's something, yeah. Once you're a made man, you're in for life.
That's so cool. You got to let me know if you're ever invited to the mansion.
I'll work on that.
You got to hook me up on that. All right, the last and biggest thing?
The penultimate thing is, on 666, I was not, of course, able to be at Horns Across the Hawthorne. Yes. However, I was traveling in a nearby country, and so while listening to you on a digitally powered device that will not be named,
I wouldn't know anything about
that. I did Horns at the Vatican.
Oh no, no, you're screwing with me.
No, I'm not screwing with you.
Do you have a picture of it?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Oh, and then you dangle it only to snatch it away.
Oh, and by the way, I'm a few weeks behind on the shows.
Yeah.
For no apparent reason, and you won that bet.
Ah, thank you. Hey, in your face, Sarah Dillon. Yeah.
I'm sorry. He already did the push-ups, though.
Where is your guy
now? I
know.
I saw the pictures of it. But seriously, I was listening to that one yesterday. So.
I know.
Yeah, you were owned. All right. So Horns, I was waiting for Horns Across the Thames, but Horns of the Vatican, I'll accept that. All right.
Yeah.
I'll have an artist rendering of it put together.
Excellent.
Great. Thank you, Hans, my friend. You continue to spread the word to your European peeps.
Cheers, Rick.
All right. Thank you. There you go. That's Hans. All right, 503-733-2970. Here's Tim Riley. And by the way, so this is Lisa Goddard happening at 1? All right, so Lisa Goddard will be happening at 1. We should probably still break, though, because I don't want to get incredibly behind.
No, we don't want
to. Are we in the middle of anything right now?
No, nothing important.
Nothing. It's a radio program. It's just nothing of any great social and political importance, Janis Joplin would say. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. Lisa Goddard coming up later. What else? We got the Jim Roop coming up. Later on, Scott Daly from Film Fever Radio. Top 5 songs featuring Marky Ramone, Don Rickles tickets, and the new Weird Al Yankovic single. You stay there. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, Scott Daly, top 5. etc., so on and so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, at the city desk here is Tim Riley.
Well, it was finally the day that Tom DeLay said goodbye. His farewell address at the House of Representatives, he defended his conservative partnership as instrumental in lowering taxes, reforming welfare, and spreading democracy throughout the world.
Hundreds of millions of people around the world liberated by a conservative foreign policy's victory over Soviet communism. What? And more than 50 million what? Iraqis and Afghanis liberated from tyranny since September the 11th, 2001.
Liberated from tyranny, food, roads,
homes,
roofs. Okay, whatever you say, dude.
It's the beautiful rebel.
Yes, seriously. Okay. Well, who am I to criticize the truth-telling skills of one Tom DeLay?
After all, DeLay says conservative policies have changed lives.
Conservatism isn't about feeling people's pain.
It's about inflicting it.
It's about curing it.
Uh-huh.
And the results since the first great conservative victory in 1980 speak for themselves.
Here's the thing about this. They keep listening to the first half of this quote.
Conservatism
again.
Isn't about feeling people's pain. It's about curing it.
Okay, I'm going to just eschew all the obvious jokes that... Well, baby, see, you see what they're... Here's,
it's creepy the way he said that.
Oh, he's a creepy man. Ugh. Here's the thing about Tom DeLay and the Republicans in general. They suffer from... Still, you can tell that every moment... I mean, isn't that, what, 2006?
Yes, it is.
2006, every single moment, Republicans get out of bed, feet hit the floor. You know what they're thinking? Bill Clinton. Still, to this day, it is they are obsessed with, terrified by, hateful of, living in the shadow of Bill Clinton. 8 years, you could... They're still taking shots.
Conservatism
isn't about feeling
people's pain.
So that's, I mean, they are still haunted by the specter of Bill Clinton, who they know in their black little Voldemort hearts, they know is the most popular president of the last 30 years, him and Reagan. I mean, Reagan and Clinton, side by side, those are the two. And they know, man, that they're going to get their lunch eaten, not only in the midterms, but in 2008. So they're just there, they just can't shake it. It's like a bad case of fleas.
And Tom DeLay gives his final goodbye.
And so with love and gratitude for friend and foe alike, patriots all, I yield back the floor of our beloved house, and I exit, as always, stage right.
Okay, that's just stupid.
Through the white only exit.
And I guess... Zing! All right, that's a lot funnier than I was going to say. And I get the feeling, by the way, that he's doing that thing that Newt Gingrich did that one time where he's sitting there talking to no one. I get the feeling it's just an empty
room. Swing that camera around.
Empty, yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know what I'm talking about. That's, yeah, so they're speaking to an empty rotunda. All right, well, there you go. Tom DeLay's gone. There you go, he's...
Oh, how are we going to live?
Here's the thing. Republicans and the politicians in general, but lately it's Republicans. You know what it is when Republicans leave office or are hounded out? Tim and I are always like, it's like when your girlfriend leaves you or whatever, and you're just like, how am I going to live? And then, like, the next day, you see somebody, and they're like, well, all right, you know. And it's, remember when James Traficant was sent to prison? We're like, how are we going to get by without James Traficant? People don't remember who he is anyway.
Nope.
When Trent Lott was run out of town on a rail, we didn't think we were going to be able to do. When Newt Gingrich went away, we didn't be able to do. Tom DeLay, he'll be replaced by somebody else tomorrow that we can ridicule.
Well, a woman saw her boyfriend with another woman and went into a range. Or rage, I should say. It happened during rush hour yesterday morning on Cockrell Road in Dallas. Officer Lonnie Allen said the resulting accident caused a Dallas police pickup truck to be damaged.
The woman sideswiped the man's vehicle, which knocked it into the police vehicle. She continued southbound, turned around, went the wrong direction on Cockrell Hill, ran head-on into the man's vehicle.
There you go. Some of these cuts we just play for the accident, by the way.
Well, it turned out that the ex-boyfriend was not having a romance with a woman riding with him. She was a co-worker who needed a ride because her son had taken the car.
By the way, speaking of nutcases, we got that Ann Coulter sound finally. I don't even know if I want to bother to play it now, but she really is just as shrill and crazy as you think. So we've got that, and we've got an Ann Coulter. Do we have an Ann Coulter story? Didn't I give you something about Ann Coulter and church?
Oh, I'm sure there's something in there.
Well, we don't have to get to it right now if you don't want to. It's,
yeah, let me look.
I don't know if you want to have your delay with a Coulter chaser. But we can do it later. We can do it now. It doesn't matter.
I think we'll
I'm easy like
later.
Sunday morning. All right, we'll just move on then.
All right. Well, anyway, a Centralia man is getting rabies shots after a tug of war with a raccoon. They were fighting for Richard Freeburn's dog, a four-pound Pomeranian named Jazzy. The raccoon had pulled Jazzy under a porch, and Freeburn pulled it back out. The dog had minor injuries, and the raccoon was last seen running from the yard. Freeburn is getting rabies shots because of a few scratches, and Jazzy was already immunized.
That's a Farrelly Brothers scene right there. You just take that, you just run with it. And Pomeranians, the things that are really tiny and mean, or the things that are really tiny and...
Anything tiny is usually mean.
Yeah, what's like that? Have you seen that dog they got? It's become like Bring Your Dog to Work Month here. Here's another way in our continuing saga called Ways in Which CBS Radio Is Not Like Where You Work. There were three dogs here yesterday, or 2 days ago. There was Carol. Was it Carol that had that? The 15-year-old Lhasa,
yes,
Murphy.
So cute.
And then there was, like, somebody else had something, one of those dogs with weird pointy ears, like little bat ears, Scottish something or other. And then there's, like, that little pocket dog. It's always hanging out at the front. So it's become like a whole, it's become like a big menagerie up front. But then there was that story yesterday, which I did not print, about that woman who was attacked by a dead puppy. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was too gross for me.
Yeah, no.
I was going to talk about that.
What?
I'm not going to read it. I'm just, no. For the same reason.
She was attacked by a dead puppy.
Not attacked. It was
used to attack.
Sort of used as a blunt force object. Mm-hmm. Let's move on.
Well, let's talk about Ann Poulter.
Let's talk, speaking of blunt force dogs.
That worthless cur.
Bada bing!
Appearing on the cover of her latest manifesto, Godless, the Church of Liberalism, adorned with a wooden crucifix and necklace, right-wing pundit Ann Coulter takes on liberals on explicitly religious grounds. Invoking the sectarian rhetoric of the Christian right, Coulter denounces liberalism as the opposition party to God and a comprehensive belief system denying the Christian belief in man's immortal soul. Coulter fills the pages of Godless with attacks on Hollywood, a traditional Christian right boogeyman, and quoting controversial Holocaust-denying columnist Joseph Sabin, assailing public schools for teaching an amalgam of liberalism, feminism, Darwinism, and the Playboy philosophy rather than biblical truth. Coulter also calls the Episcopal Church barely even a church. Yet Coulter is curiously reticent and godless about her own religious convictions. Nowhere in the book, for instance, does Coulter declare whether she belongs to a particular religious denomination, nor does she state where, if she attends religious services. In an August 15th article in the Time magazine by John Cloud, she provides a rare description of Coulter's attendance in church, as Cloud suggested that... Yes.
Well, the thing about this is that she apparently goes to some Presbyterian church somewhere. But I think the upshot of this is that no one has ever seen her there.
Right.
Isn't that the thing?
Mm-hmm.
That it's like she claims, as all of those people do, she claims, no, I'm a very godlike and religious, and I've taken money of my best friends to church and blah, blah, blah. But they've never, like, they went to the church and, like, Ann Coulter, and he was just sort of a who? And they said, no, this, and they held up a picture of him, and the guy had never seen her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't actually go. It's not actually true that she's Christian. So I've got the let me see if I've got this sound here. I have this is a little bit of that sound, and I realize that we're late on this, but what are you gonna do? Scotty was good enough to chop this up for us this morning. There's a little bit of Ann Coulter, who is a nutcase, talking to Matt Lauer, who I don't really know anything about. Matt, this is just sort of an enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of a thing. Matt Lauer was working with Katie Couric, right?
Yeah,
before
I guess
she went off to do the hard stories.
I've never watched that show.
No one has. No one. No one I know has ever watched that show. Let's see. So this is him talking to Ann Coulter about something or other, blah, 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 America, yada, da, 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 hot rails to hell.
When the real reason is Iraq, and that's a hard problem to fix?
I don't think so. I mean, and that's the one thing he's doing right, and that the Democrats are incapable.
She's got a huge Adam's apple, by the way, and it just bobs up and down, all distracted. Like, you just want to reach out and pull it out. Not in a violent way, but just in a way that it, you know what it is? When you watch her talk, it's like those old follow the bouncing ball it kind of a thing, where it's just, it's like up and down like that. Like that weird Piccolo Pete game on The Price is Right, where it just keeps bobbing up and down. It's like a Spirit of 76 ball on the antenna. It's huge, and she's got massive man hands. See, I'm not going to make the joke about how she looks like a woman or looks like a man, and it's probably... Because I don't think it's that. I think she's got, like, a tail and, like, a metal endoskeleton.
Horns?
Seriously, she is weird hellion metallic she-beast.
Capable of doing, and that is fighting the war on terrorism.
Well, no, I'm talking about the war in Iraq, not the war on terrorism.
She's got, speaking of broadcasting school, she's got what your voice and articulation teacher would call glottal fry. which means that she talks a lot like this, and she lets her voice... George Lucas does the same thing, where you just kind of let it sit and... in your voice.
Right. I consider them the same thing, thus.
All right, let me give you
We didn't invade Guatemala.
Let me give you some quotes from your book, all right? These are random.
Yes.
Liberalism is the opposition party to God. How do you think Democrats who believe in God are going to feel about that statement?
They probably won't like it. They don't like a lot of things I say.
These broads are millionaires, lionized on TV and in articles about them, reveling in their status as celebrities and stalked by grieferazzis. I've never seen people enjoying their husband's death so much.
She's all class.
Because they dare to speak out?
To speak out using the fact that they're widows. This is the left's doctrine of infallibility. If they have a point to make about the 9/11 commission, about how to fight the war on terrorism, how about sending in somebody we're allowed to respond to? No.
How about sending her to Iraq?
To someone who just had a family member die.
But aren't they the people in the middle of the story?
Because then if we respond, oh, you're questioning their authenticity. No,
so
the
grieve,
story
but
is...
grieve quietly.
No, the story is an attack on the nation.
And by the
that
way...
That requires a foreign policy...
It's like having somebody take a screwdriver and slowly pound it into a sensitive part of my anatomy. I can't even listen to the rest of it. Maybe we'll play the rest of it later. All right, is this Lisa Goddard? All right. Okay, well, we should do that. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, live from the Hill, CNN radio correspondent and woman about town, Lisa Goddard. How are you, Lisa?
I am doing very well, thank you. How are you doing, Rick?
I am doing fantastically speaking. Can you hand me the thing there, sir? I am doing fantastic. How's life in D.C.? Busy week for you guys.
Oh, boy, it was a heck of a busy week. It's gotten a little slower now, but it was crazy.
Well, we just heard Tom DeLay bidding his tearful Judy Garland-esque goodbye to everybody. and so he's leaving, and I was just saying that every time we get someone like Tom DeLay who leaves, it always saddens me a little because I think about all the comedic hay I will not be able to make. But then he's always replaced by somebody else, you know? It's like Trent Lott, James Traficant. There's always somebody else that we can make fun of. So.
That's right. Trent Lott's going to be around. He may even, it's remote possibility he may be the next majority leader or number two in the Senate. So you're going to hear a lot more from him. But, yeah, Tom DeLay counting down his last, I believe, last hour. He's got an open house going on, so you can even call his office, say whatever parting thoughts you want, and then after that, happy hour down the street.
So tempting. Let's back on Trent Lott for a second. Let me ask you this, honestly speaking. Do you find Trent Lott, his toupee to be distracting? Do you find that it's so large and obvious that it becomes difficult to pay attention to what he's saying?
Wow, I hadn't thought about it that way. I think he's great. I think he's great in terms of he is not scared to ruffle some feathers. He is also an old school politician, so he's playing by a lot of rules and he's playing a lot of political games. And I think you've got to keep that in mind with him. You really have to think that almost everything he says, he's saying for a strategic reason, but he says this in a kind of foghorn, leghorn sort of, well, I say. sort of voice that, you know, he kind of wants you to think he's stupid, and he's not. And it's really fun to watch, and it's really fun to watch him kind of go head-to-head in his southern way against the White House. He has really been a bit of a thorn in their side off and on, and I'm hoping he stays around.
Okay,
just as a reporter, I like him causing trouble.
Well, see, he's a bit like Pat Buchanan in that way. For the longest time, it was just he every day, back in the late 80s, early 90s, you would just pick up the paper and Pat Buchanan was good for something right there. So, and by the way, not only did you went up on the tote board yesterday because you had the breaking news about the El Zarqawi thing, you had the Mathlete reference last week. Now, foghorn, leghorn.
Hey, Lisa, we were talking yesterday. Do you happen to have any old pictures of you in your Mathlete shirt?
Oh, no, you cut out. Do I happen to have any old...
Oh, any old pictures of you in your Mathlete shirt?
You know what? I might. That was back in Catholic school, even. I was there for 4 years. I think I might have one.
I think Rick's head's about to explode.
No, I'm... I mean, just for purely informative purposes,
yes.
because we Mathletes, we geeks have to stick together. Lisa,
I think that's true. Well, you know, I got in trouble. I got an email from an angry listener who was mad at me for calling the spelling bee kids geeks. I guess technically they probably are more nerdy than they are geeks. But I think this person was mad thinking I was putting them down. I said, no, this is coming, you know, come on, that's coming from right here.
No, the geek shall inherit the earth, Lisa Goddard. You you and I and everybody out there who can quote, all original 79 Star Trek episodes. It is our world. Everyone else just lives in it.
Well, speaking of Tom DeLay.
Yeah, yes. Let's talk about this Al Zarqawi thing for a minute. Look, it is far be it for me to second guess the judgment of the American government and the way that they are handling the war on terror slash war in Iraq slash whatever. And obviously he's a terrible guy who will be missed by no one that matters. And we all know that that's true. My question is, it just seems to me, do you suppose it was the brightest idea to be rolling out these pictures of his bloated, battered corpse everywhere on every news outlet in the world? Does it not seem like that might be stirring the pot just a little bit in the wrong direction?
Oh, I don't know. I think that they had to deal with some real decisions there. And I think the other decision would have been to let conspiracy theorists, and there would be thousands of them out there, say that, in fact, they hadn't killed Zarqawi, for Al-Qaeda in Iraq to be able to send out emails under his name, potentially, and pretend that this wasn't true at all. I think, just like with Uday and Hussein, did I get that right?
I no one knows.
When they put out those photos, it was for the exact same reason. They wanted to prove that they had killed this man. But obviously, photos in death don't look the same as in life.
No, and you know what? And look, I tell you, we had all kinds of photos of everything on 9/11, but I still got people in the audience who think the Pentagon was hit by a big piece of Swiss cheese, you know?
My boyfriend's best friend will not. He is convinced. And in fact, I'm good friends with the journalist who saw the plane hit the Pentagon
right. And
first reported it. But you're right. A lot of people do not believe it.
And so, I guess we'll kind of see how it unfolds. Were the people in Iraq or the troublemakers, the insurgents, were they getting kind of direct orders from Al-Zarqawi, or was it just,
giving direct orders to his group? And that group included a lot of foreign fighters, a lot of people from around the Middle East, your mercenary, big gun types, that he was giving direct orders to. Now, someone else may be giving those orders now. There may be a fight for power. It's hard to say, but, you know, like we talked about yesterday, he was just one factor
right. Causing
violence. There were other groups that have operated separately as well.
All right. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Enjoy your weekend, Lisa. We will talk to you soon.
You guys, too. See
all right. Thank you. There you go. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. All right. There you go. Thank you. By the way, I'd like to thank Sarah for stepping in and passing on the mathlete shirt question, because there was no way that I could do that.
You're welcome. She was in Catholic school. Are you backed away from your microphone? It couldn't get any better than
what?
That.
Why does everyone who went to Catholic school end up in radio? The poorest.
Because, you know, a rich man cannot pass through the kingdom of heaven, Tim Riley.
That's true.
You know that.
The Lord doesn't like people with money.
No.
We'll open up those pearly gates. We'll all be there one of these days.
It's true. Because we had talked last week with Lisa Goddard, who is a fine woman and a fine journalist, and I would say has a visually pleasing.
She's a vivacious young lady.
Yes, and so no, but she said that she was a mathlete, which I had just said as a joke, and she's like, Rick, as a matter of fact, I was a mathlete, which is fantastic. And then she's smart, she's a journalist, and she's, you know, whatever, and she works in DC. And then Sarah and I had made this joke about we got to get a picture of her in the mathlete shirt. So Sarah weighs in with that today, and Lisa's response is, well, yes, from when I was in Catholic school, and I backed away from the microphone for fear of making what's come to be known as the McRibby's back noise, which is what Jack Osborne did. And there was this episode of the Osbournes where they're driving along in the car, they pass McDonald's, and Jack Osborne does this whole and there's like this big inhalation, and then he says, McRib is back! And that's a kind of a noise that I found myself making from time to time. And I did not wish to make that at the Catholic school reference for fear that it would sound, you know, creepy. So, thank you. Well, I do what I can. All right, here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
All right, are we all set for a penis watch?
Are we ever?
Look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start melting away.
Ba-dum-ba-ba.
I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Well, Dave Farmer had a miracle escape when he was skewered through the groin with a pool cue.
Yeah.
The dad of one had jumped onto a pool table as a prank during a pal's stag party. When he leapt up...
A pal's stag party or a pal's stab party?
Well, when he jumped off, he was kind of stabbed upright by a fellow reveler.
Oh.
It pierced his scrotum and soft tissue.
And with soft tissue.
With the tip exiting by his lower stomach. Amazingly, the effects of having 8 pints meant he wanted to play on. But friends saw blood and they talked him into being rushed to the hospital.
Okay. Was he nude at the time or was he?
No.
It seems like your pants alone would repel the pool cue. Unless you're coming down at exactly. What kind of pool? Is this in England?
Yes, it is.
This is from the Sun.
Yes, it is.
Fantastic.
Sun Online.
Best newspaper ever. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to get our man Hans at the London School of Economics. Hans, if you are listening now via some technology that I wouldn't know anything about or condone in any way, you got to send us a few copies of the Sun. Because we've only ever read it online. I've never read it in person. It's sort of your New York Post, but even better. And so he jumps off. Do they have sharp pool cues or something in Britain? I mean, are they sort of whittled to a fine point?
He said, I thought the cue had just passed through my jeans, and I pulled it out. But some of the lads spotted blood and asked me to drop my trousers. Their faces went white when they saw the entrance and exit wounds. But the wound was all stitched up, and Dave kept on playing for 2 more nights. He was very lucky not to have serious damage, said the doctor.
Yes.
The cue just missed his testicles.
Oh, okay.
I got very sore as the drinks wore on. I saw the x-rays and nearly passed out.
All right. Thank you. And I encourage you all now to make no cue ball references. Mm-hmm. It's 503-733-970. There's your penis watch for
take a look
Friday.
At my enormous penis.
Soft
and
tissue.
My troubles start melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Well, frozen urine is something police in Rochester, New Hampshire say they never uncovered before until now. They were recovering a stolen refrigerator from a home last week and say they found drugs. After getting a warrant, they returned and were quite shocked to find frozen urine in the freezer. The speculation is that the urine was being held for the owner and other drug users as clean urine used to help pass drug tests. Along with the urine in the refrigerator, also allegedly, they found 86 grams of crack cocaine, narcotics, pills, and scales. Doug Heath is charged with drug and stolen property possession as well as firearm violations, but there are no urine charges.
See, now, at least I'm not making comments like this. Subject line of this email is Lisa Goddard's math lead shirt. See, it's not just me. Rick, this just gets better and better. She was a Catholic school girl, too. I hope she's in a plaid skirt that she rolled 3 times to make it shorter. I know about those girls and having to kneel. And when he says kneel, you know, you didn't have a dress code when you went to Catholic school, did you?
Yes, we had uniforms.
I've never asked this before. See, that was the McRib is back noise. Did you hear me make it just now?
Yeah, we had, little blue and white and black plaid skirts.
Mm-hmm. So were the girls at the Catholic school.
I'm not saying it.
That I went next door to.
Yeah?
Mount St. Mary's, they were called the Mounties.
Okay. There you go. Just insert witty radio comment there. I'm going to leave all. What colors were your skirt, Sarah? Was it a jumper?
No, the younger girls had jumpers. But so my sister had a jumper, but I had a skirt.
And what color was it?
It was blue and white and black checked.
It was sort of like a plaid sort of a thing?
Yeah, it was a plaid.
Okay, there you go. So I'm just going to. You know what it is? This is just sort of like a build-your-own, comment out there. There you go. They're component parts. There's the disparate elements. You just take those. You just assemble your own sort of observation about that. It would be wrong for me. Here's Jim Riley at the city desk.
The judge in the R. Kelly child pornography case has ruled the public can see the videotape at the center of the prosecution's case.
Lucky me.
The tape allegedly shows the R&B singer having sex with an underage girl. Kelly's lawyer tried to block the public view of the tapes, maintaining the singer would not get a fair trial. Prosecutors filed their objection to public viewing, calling it child pornography.
Well, this is what I don't understand. And let me be very clear about this at the outset, that in no way am I asking to, interested in, I'm not desirous of viewing the R. Kelly tape. In no way is that something I wish to watch. Please do not send it to me. Mm. In no way do I wish for anyone, and I mean, and this is not one of those things where I say, like, whatever you do, don't send me pictures of, you know, Christina Aguilera and that new nude lady. There's no fooling. Now, please not to be sending me the R. Kelly tape. But do you have the story? Do you have the R. Kelly thing you just gave me?
Yes, I do.
Do you have it?
I threw it away.
No, because here's what I don't understand about this. I don't understand, and this is strictly speaking.
There you are.
I'm only asking this in a sense of legal curiosity, because I am sort of perplexed by this. Because it says, and this is like the fourth story I read about this, the judge in the R. Kelly, and I don't wish to be off-putting in some way, but I... Look, we've all followed the R. Kelly story, whether we wanted to or not. It's one of those things that you're flipping around, and no matter where you landed, they seem to be talking about it for a while.
because this is R. Kelly engaged in intimate behaviors with what they claim to be an underage girl. And when I say underage, I'm not talking about like she's 17 and she looked 18, or she had a forged ID and somehow got on the bus. I mean, she was like 12 or something, 13.
Yes.
Can you hear me in the back? I'm just saying. And so this R. Kelly tape, but he's that's what I'm talking about, because it's not, and again, we're very circumspect. This is not...
It makes everyone go, ew.
This is not the run-of-the-mill intimate activity that you and perhaps a loved one, a woman that you feel very close to, hugging each other in a special way. This is, there's some very off-putting and wrong behavior on this tape, and you all know what I'm talking about. So I guess my question is this, when the judge says... The judge, and I'm reading right here from the Associated Press. The judge says the public can see the videotape. And again, please do not send this to me. At the center of the prosecution's case, the tape allegedly shows the R&B singer having sex with an underage girl and various other crude activities, if the allegations are to be believed. But I don't understand how they can do that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand how that's not illegal. Like, if you are working at some, you know, you're working at some torrid afternoon television news magazine or something, and you do watch it, like, what if he's found guilty, and it turns out that she was, that, like, does it then become illegal? Like, is it legal to watch it now, but then as soon as, the judge has ruled that the public can see the videotape at the center of the prosecution's case. It's right here.
Huh, that's weird, because they're... Didn't we have a story like that before where these kids made a sex tape when they were underage?
See, that was a Dan Savage column. We were just talking about that. Yeah. There were some kids. He was 16. She was 15.
And now
a couple
they're both
years ago.
Of age.
Yeah, totally. He was 16. She was 15. They were high school sweethearts. They filmed themselves in the bedroom. Later, now they're both like 25 or 24 or whatever. They're in their 20s. And the question, but it's like they found out that it is like they could go to the slammer for it because it's child pornography, even though it was themselves as teenagers and it was consensual. It's really weird, because as soon as you say this, then suddenly, every tabloid show, every whatever, is going to have a copy of it. Then if he's found guilty, then it's like, how do you... It's just one of those things that's perplexing to me. I just don't understand how the law works sometimes. It was like the Pam and Tommy thing. Like, I never understood the logic behind that. It was stolen out of a safe the size of a refrigerator, and yet I was able to go buy it at, like, Fantasy Limited in Seattle. It doesn't make any sense. It's all very strange. Well, what are you going to do? It's 503-733-2970. We should probably take a break here. Here's what's coming up. Come on, we got a pair of Don Rickles tickets to give away. We have tickets to... there's a benefit concert for Curtis Salgado. We got those tickets to give away as well. Jim Roop will be here. Scotty J's Man on the Street. The brand new Weird Al Yankovic single. What else? Top 5 Ramones songs. Oh, I've missed the post. Ah, damn. Top 5 Ramones songs featuring Marky Ramone. Scott Dowling from FilmFeverRadio.com will be here. And more from Tim Riley. Stay right there. We'll be back. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.